Hello, everyone. I hope you can hear me okay. Let's do our opening prayer. Oh, Heavenly Father.
Oh, Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Beloved
Jesus Christ.
Blessed Master.
Blessed Master.
Dearest Mother.
Dearest Mother.
Beloved David.
Beloved David.
Saints and sages of all religions.
Saints and sages of all religions.
I bow to all of you.
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king.
Be thou the only king.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Oh. Oh. Peace.
Peace.
Bliss.
Bliss.
Amen.
Amen.
I'm going to play a short clip. And we can meditate for a few minutes.
Oh.
I'd like to do our Bible reading from Proverbs, chapter 31. This is in the some of the words in the Sabbath. Just starting with verse 10. Who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies. The heart of her husband doth safely trust in her, so that he shall have no need of spoil. She will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. She seeketh wool and flax, and worketh willingly with her hands. She is like the merchant's ships. She bringeth her food from afar. She riseth also while it is yet night, and giveth meat to her household and a portion to her maidens. She considereth a field and buyeth it. With the fruit of her hand she planteth a vineyard. She girdeth her loins with strength and strengtheneth her arms. She perceiveth that her merchandise is good. Her candle goeth not out by night. She layeth her hands to the spindle, and her hands hold the distaff. And so, in aid of that, I'm going to share the video, YouTube video, and I'll give you a little background on this. So this is after Jesus is started his mission, and he's called some of his apostles. And in fact, I think he's called them all at this point. So I forget whether this is season one or two. And one of the questions I've always had, and we've talked about this, is what did Jesus tell the families of the apostles? We're looking at this story of Jesus, and there's some practical sides to it that, you know, in my opinion, a lot has been taken out of the stories of these times. And I think it's a mythological story, but it still has to hold together logically. And I think it helps us greatly to think of this great man, this great Jewish saint, this divine personage as practical. And so I love The Chosen, and I'm going to play you one more thing. And this has to do with Simon's wife. So Peter, he's not Peter yet. His name is Simon. And they're now being set ready to travel with Jesus, to do some traveling away from Capernaum. And Simon's wife's name is Eden. And Eden thinks, of course, that they've already gone, and she's at home, left by herself and waiting for her husband to come home. So I hope you can hear this okay. This is only 5 minutes. Dasha is her mother.
Eden.
Jesus? I wasn't expecting you here.
People usually aren't.
Can I get you something warm to drink? I was just stoking the fire.
You saw it first, you know.
What do you mean?
What I see in Simon. You were the first person to notice when no one else did. That connects us.
My mother said I was drawn to his wildness and that I would regret it. I wonder what she will say now.
We're going into town to sell these nets. We'll be right back.
Stay here a moment, Simon.
I just want to leave some extra money behind for Eden and Nima while I'm away.
Put your nets down and go sit with your mother-in-law. It's all right. I told Simon to make sacrifices and leave things behind in order to follow me. You are one flesh with Simon. He cannot make sacrifices that are not also yours. You have a role to play in all of this.
Do I?
You will know in time. I can't make everything about this easier for you.
That wouldn't be our people's way.
No. It has not been. Nor will it continue to be. But I see you. You understand? I know it is not easy to be at home when your husband is out doing all of this. Even when you are excited about it and proud of him. So, I wouldn't ask you to do this without taking care of a few things.
You mean?
Plus, normal Simon is difficult enough. You think I want to travel with a worried Simon?
No.
No, I do not.
A fever spiked. Her forehead burns, my hand to the touch.
We should get a doctor.
There is no need.
Who are you?
This is Jesus of Nazareth.
You've never met him before.
Welcome to my son-in-law's home.
Thank you.
What am I doing lying here?
You had a terrible fever.
And all of you staring down.
Dasha, don't.
No one move. I'll be right back with some drinks.
And here, dear, come from this fire.
Coming.
Let's see. Ryan butter for Simon, pomegranate arrows.
Thank you.
Goat cheese.
Thank you.
Does your friend like goat cheese?
Yes, I love goat cheese. I should, see about the goat cheese.
Thank you.
Me? For what?
For obeying and following him. Let him hear.
Simon, nectarines or plums?
So last week, we talked about marriage, and I thought we would continue a little of that. There's a Jewish saying that says, thank God I was born a man. And when I first heard that, it seemed like a harsh thing to say, with that recognition that women's lot is much more difficult. Especially in those days. We're starting on a new experiment in the modern age. And trying to sort things out. And I don't think things are settled yet very well. But eventually things will get better. Master and Sri Yukteswar teach us that we're in an upswinging Dwapara Yuga. But it's a long haul, thousands of years, to get through into the Golden Age. And already in this early Dwapara Yuga, we're having things much easier physically. Time has been annihilated with travel. Space has been annihilated to a great extent. The limitations have been modified. And so it upsets everything. But the relationship between a man and a woman and the children that come from that are really the most important things to understand clearly and to have not in flux. One of the hardest things that it is to watch nowadays is children from a divorced family and all the what happens with fractured families and all the uncertainties it must give them. Now, there are worse times. There's times of war and privation and starvation. But this doesn't mean that this doesn't have its own special requirements and own special problems to solve. God is ever new. We can think back a couple hundred years and we can all imagine how many people prayed to get a vehicle that could travel to see the doctor. And that's easy nowadays and was hard 100 years ago. And all the medical improvements for our lives. We must have thought if we could have those kinds of things improved and changed, that that would solve so many problems that we wouldn't have much to complain about. But the ultimate or the essential facts of life in this plane are what they are. And we have to contend with what it takes to bring children into the world. But that relies on a foundation that exists, that's created first at the marriage level for the husband and wife, but also the support that should be there around them. This is why weddings were set up to be public, so that the promises were made to keep everyone aware, or to let everyone know that these two people are committed to each other and thereby committed to the family, and the family's committed to them. And friends can play a role, and many times do play tremendous roles. Churches play a wonderful role. All the positive organs of society. So I don't have any idea how things are going to settle down in the next 100 to 200 years. But I feel that they will settle. And we'll see improvements. To make this life easier for everyone. There's so much to work out when you're here. And many chickens come home to roost from our karmic past, and so it's really important to follow Papa's teachings in regard to that we must just keep our mind on God, as Mother said, and to always focus on the all suffering as being something that's necessary for our own good, as Papa teaches. So what I loved about this little short piece, when I first saw it on the extended many, many hours of three seasons, was this answering this question that we all had as we grew up with in the Christian world anyway, with the stories of Jesus. What was it like? I've often thought it'd be nice to see a book about the family, you know, just a novel like the Nazarene has, you know, Sholomash has written about the Nazarene so beautifully, putting us all back in that time and what the constraints were. But I've often thought it'd be nice to know, just to fill in these gaps. And so I'm very appreciative of creative minds and actors and actresses being able to pull this off in whatever way they can, because they're doing something pretty marvelous, playing with these ideas. So it's nice to think that perhaps there was a scene like that with Jesus, with all of the other people's in their lives. And that Jesus really does understand would be so important for a person faced with difficult times. She knows it's going to be difficult. And that people are aware of that. And that she's kept in people's thoughts. The guru especially can play that role, to know the guru knows what's going on and still allows it to play out the way that it is. Doesn't try to fix everything. Can't, perhaps, because of the need to have people go through what they need to go through karmically. So you might be able to cure one problem, but can you cure them all? Would you want to? These are great mysteries, really, as to why God can't just fix everything. But we don't know that God isn't fixing everything. So many times I've felt protected by Mother. Felt her thoughts on me and thoughts on people around.
Larry, if I could interject for a minute. I just had two thoughts while you were talking about that. First of all, it was a lovely scene. I really did enjoy it. And it made me think two different things. One, and that is that both Mother and David were so considerate to everybody's spouses and families and really tried to create harmony and helped, you know, counsel husbands and wives and parents and children and other things, and always were so respectful to the people, even when they weren't devotees of theirs. So if the one person was a devotee and the other one wasn't, they both always tried to still see that one and give them love. So there's that. And then there's the contrary, where Jesus said, I did not come to bring peace, but a sword. Mm-hmm. Mother against child, well, you know, father against son. And I also thought about the one time that there was a woman that I had known in one circumstance. And she started feeling like God was telling her something, because she met three different devotees of Mother's, all in different circumstances. One she worked with, one she did this with, one she did that with. And she started thinking, I really must belong to this group, to Mother.
Yeah, I remember.
And so she was very excited about coming to see Mother one time, and she brought her husband. And the interesting thing was, is that that particular week, Mother was very much into talking about the mystical crucifixion and the death of the ego. And it's almost like she emphasized the word death of the ego and the crucifixion. And she was on a roll and she went on and on. And my friend sat there just mesmerized, and everything she wanted, you know, her whole being went out to Mother, and her husband was scared to death.
Yeah.
And speaking of death. And so afterwards, my friend decided that she would not come and be a disciple because her husband was not attracted and was not ready. And sometime later, I talked to Mother about it, and she said she should come anyways. That it was right for her to be coming and to be a disciple, and that her husband would either come or not come later,
right.
But that her duty as a soul was to follow that impulse.
And she had every reason to think that it was strengthened. I mean, Mother did. She had every reason, I suspect, to think that it would strengthen the husband for dealing with that fear. But at either rate, she had a responsibility. The woman did, yeah. But those are tough decisions. No, but the mother is saying that the woman has a responsibility to her own lifting up in the spirit and being spiritually advancing her spiritual state, and that her husband can benefit from that, but certainly be tested and
come or not come.
We probably wouldn't. In that example, he wouldn't have come, but that wouldn't have been so bad for her to come. So that's an interesting thing that Mother said that, yeah.
Anyways, just thinking of that lovely harmonious scene you showed us, but then to know that it isn't always that way, and the disciple has to follow along. And, you know, Simon Peter had to leave.
Right.
Even if his wife was back there saying, I'll never speak to you again.
Right. It could. These are things that are left. And I really appreciate this one, because I think it's, in other words, going this direction, saying that the thing that's the device they use here is that everyone knows secretly kind of, but that he's the Messiah. And so we've been waiting for the Messiah and all that. These are things that are, you know, standard Christian doctrine, but they kind of make me not so, fulfilled in that, because if you know it's God in human form, and then it's life is so much easier. But it's still, this is still shown to be a test and difficult time, and they show many difficult tests for the disciples and the apostles that go through. But the idea that people would know everyone has these different ways of getting closer to the guru. You first meet the guru and you think it's okay, and then you slowly get more involved in it. And then you know, wow, then you come to the realization that this is something for your own destiny, and this is some great, wonderful relationship. So it's easy when you get to that point, but most people don't get to know that the person who's your teacher is God incarnate. It's a little bit difficult to accept it from that point of view. But only as a small criticism that, you know, with the full understanding that what they've done is wonderful, and that she makes it easier for her to accept Jesus as being someone that's worthwhile. But I do love the idea that she is there, you know, distraught somewhat. And you don't know this just prior to that, she's crying a little bit as he leaves. So, and then Peter's thinking enough of her that he actually comes back and starts to sell some nets. So he couldn't even leave too. So she would have had that interaction from that point of view. So it's a beautifully done scene.
It really is. It really is. Yeah. That wasn't any kind of criticism. It just brought those two things to mind, because this is how we would like it to be, certainly. And because those of us who maybe haven't had the discord with our spouses about it have perhaps had discord with our family.
Well, Jesus said too one time that your mother is told that his mother is and brothers are outside waiting to see him. And he said, my family is those who serve me, those who obey my commandments and follow me. That's who my family is. I wish I could remember the actual quote because it's quite good, but I don't remember it. So,
you know, Larry, I really appreciate you showing us that scene. And one of the things that I got out of it, which is so wonderful, is you could see the light in her eyes.
I know. Yeah. It's beautifully lighted. Yeah.
See that she's starting to comprehend who he is. And then you can also kind of see that upliftment.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's something we can all relate to. Like when you're, you know, in the presence of your guru and you're in the presence of that spiritual greatness and you get lifted up, you realize in that moment what's happening to
right,
you.
Right. And it shows on her face, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. My, yes, exactly. Oh my gosh. Oh my, you know, this is what I've been looking for my whole life. You know, this is it.
Yeah.
And it's such a magical, wonderful, incredible experience.
Yeah.
That's beyond our normal experience.
And you know,
she conveyed that really well, and they conveyed that in the scene really well. And I really appreciate that kind of, that moment of realization.
This is the view we have of Jesus too, isn't it? That's what I do like about what they, in other words, he may test us and all that, but in general, we have this view, the Christians do especially. Jesus loves us. In fact, Jesus saves. We see those bumper stickers and everything like that. But we also see Jesus loves you. And what a powerful thing that is. Because they see Jesus that way, that he sees all, he understands, and he still loves you. So, yeah, that he'd be loving. He's not like John the Baptist, kind of a hellraiser or at least a rabble-rouser. And no, he's like this. This is so beautifully done. Good actors.
And the other thing that's nice is for her to realize that she has a role
right.
for the guru too. You know, so she right. has a role in that she's...
And she has it confirmed. He says so.
Yeah. That she doesn't have to be off with him as a disciple doing right. great things.
Right.
The other thing I really appreciate is how you tied in the Bible reading, the Bible right. reading you yeah. said at first.
Thanks.
That tied in so beautifully with the mother once she was free of the sickness. You know, she just jumps out of bed and immediately starts getting food for everybody and making sure everybody is comfortable and welcome. And it just tied in so perfectly with the Bible reading.
And it showed her personality too, because what does she do when she first sees him? She says kind of, who are you? You know, in a confrontational way, which is her personality, evidently. You kind of see that. So,
but it kind of makes you appreciate that. But so many women bring, you know.
Yeah.
The piece that really spoke to me was when he was saying, when Christ was saying, you saw it in him first.
Yeah.
And that's what ties us. And yeah. it's that
yeah.
hint of God realization that,
yeah.
that flow.
That he's acknowledging her developed sense of intuition and God knowledge, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, he really is.
It's actually a really moving scene.
Yeah.
It is. It's very emotional.
It is, yeah. You know, the other nice thing about it, because I think this scene is fairly early in the seasons, but you do see them meeting in Simon's house later too. So as it develops, because they're going to do, I think, 7 seasons. And this is they've only done 3 so far. And so they've got a long ways to go. And so this is early days. What is it like when Jesus went to Capernaum, when he went to Beth, the different houses for Mary and Martha, different places? What was it like for him to do that?
The other thing I appreciate is that in this kind of day and age, you know, where you see things on cable and they want to put an F-bomb in the middle of every
right.
sentence.
Oh, exactly.
I really, really appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Somebody's treating this subject with so much respect
yeah. Yeah.
and tenderness and sensitivity.
Right.
And it just gives me some hope.
I know. And it's stuff that's not talked about.
Right.
That's what's beautiful about it. Yeah.
Yeah, everybody wants to show the big final, you right. know, scene on the cross or whatever. And
right.
Right. It's all the subtleties.
All the miracles. And, of course, he even does a miracle there, too. It's very nicely done. But he's also acknowledging what she's faced with in that time. The idea that she would travel with them, especially with her own mother being sick, it's impossible she wouldn't. Now, also the other odd thing is they do have women traveling with Jesus. His mother travels with him. Mary Magdalene travels, and then a woman named Rami or something like that travels. Don't know why. They bring in some other characters. But they play a role, and it's good, because evidently that was part of the biblical story, is that Jesus traveled with, or consorted with anyway, all types of people. I love the idea that Jesus says about going to Matthew's house in the Jesus of Nazareth story, that I have not come to for the righteous, I've come for the sinners. That's what I'm here for. Of course, I want to meet with them. It's pretty wonderful.
And I also like that he told her, you have a role to play.
Right.
You know, sometimes when you're in the supporting role or you're keeping the home fires burning and somebody leaves, you know, you feel like you've been kind of sidelined.
Right.
You know,
right.
You're kind of out of the action. You're not a very important figure. Right.
Or you're going to miss the fun, too. You're going to miss.
I appreciate that he told her, you know, you've got a role to play, and it's an important role. And the light in her face was just, you know, really tremendous. It's what we like to see.
Well, and the other story is the Mary and Martha dilemma, dichotomy, which I think is, you know, the way it's portrayed in the Bible is very unique to women. It's a situation that women are faced with. So in that sense, the regular full Bible does deal with some of these things.
Can you be more specific?
Well, Mary and Martha, the story with Mary and Martha is Mary was just hanging around with Jesus and sit at his feet and get him anything he wanted. What, Jill? And then... But you're also Martha. So Martha is busy in the kitchen in this context of the story of Jesus.
Only when I have to be.
Well, it's to reflect that single thing about women. Mary and Martha really are the same person in a way, or addressing that issue that there's two roles that they can play. Life was so much easier then, in that sense. You knew what you had to do. You didn't have to be upset or wondering or anything like that. You may not like it. Yeah.
David always spoke of
easier and simpler at the same, Larry.
Right. Absolutely.
Sorry, Connie.
Go ahead, Connie. There's the relationship that Jesus had with his mother. He gives the responsibility to John at the end of the cross. So there's some interesting things in that era that are pretty revolutionary. And certainly the idea that I think, you know, the early church clearly had the idea that everyone's equal in the church. Once you come to the church, slaves and servants and well-to-do people, and when they're there worshiping together, you're all equal. There's a little bit of an odd story when I guess a person, this forget her name now. I read a book about it anyway. Paul among the people, and she said that the wearing of a hat or wearing a head covering was always what well-to-do people did when they went in public. A well-to-do woman would wear a head covering when they were in church or some high spiritual place. And that women who didn't wear hair covering were known to be servants and going around and slaves. And that was one way of identifying him. And so it's a story I'd never thought about before, but it was being required for all people. If you're going to join our church, you want to be with us. You have to accept these people. You have to become more equal or equal when you enter this place. And so all women will wear head covering. So we see it now as a restriction. Well, they have to wear it. And men have to take their hats off, you know, which is just the conventions we've got. But how they came to be is really very strange to know that time, how different it was in that time. So the role of women is we have the luxury of thinking of the aspect of men and women in each person. There's a male aspect and a female aspect in each person. Mother had a very strong father power about her. She was very much had some male aspects to her, and she talked about that. But she was mostly very warm and sweet, but she had that spine of steel, and she had that father aspect come through her sometimes. So mother worked in a job. She had to work just to bring food to the table, for her three children, with her husband being unable to work. So all of these things have always been dealt with in society. But once you're faced with five children and you really don't have alternatives except for family members, having a husband going to work every day and healthy and bringing home something is a big help. Humans have a very different thing that results because of the long gestation, the long growing to adulthood. There's nothing in the animal kingdom comes close to that. So there's need for support from all around. And it's certainly the best thing you can do for men is to give them a family and responsibilities and things that they're appreciated for, and contributing to society at large, and contributing to and keeping sustaining the family. It's really marvelous. Let me bring up one more thing, and that is this: the Jews really did a wonderful thing wherever it came from, and that is there were patriarchs with many wives in the Old Testament. But slowly it moved to around Jesus' time, and well before then, that everyone should have a wife. Every man and woman everyone should be married. In fact, during the time of Jesus, the Pharisees, and I believe people who went to the temple, weren't allowed to wear certain things. I forget, the fringe or something, without being married. It was an indication of being married, and that you weren't really a fully man until then. So these are restrictive things, but they're also in aid of the family unit. It's all to do with that. It has terrible consequences sometimes because of these pressures and the shame that people lived with as a result of not being able to do that or do it well. Suffering like that makes us more likely to be sympathetic and empathetic with others going through difficult times. We all know that story for ourselves, and we also see it in others.
The marriage, as we go up the path, it seems like it's more about bringing the balance within ourselves, though.
Right.
The male and the female. But until that point, that outward balance is so useful.
Yeah, so one of the big mysteries of mother's teaching is the idea that she has. And let's talk about that again, because it is important, and I don't think we can easily wrap our minds around it, and we're not going to answer it tonight, but it's something to keep in mind, because she talked about it quite a bit. And that is that to gain full realization, it's best to be married. Now that's so different than anything that she was taught and that her own guru taught. All of the things that he brought forward around spiritual attainment was celibacy, and you know, monks and swamis were the highest form. And so mother, maybe for this time things are different perhaps too, maybe mother's position on that, but it was informed. Now, we don't know whether she had this idea before, but she always told it in the context of Swami Ashokananda. Now, this was a man who was very, very powerful. He even controlled the animals around the ashram where he lived, snakes and everything else. He was very, very powerful spiritually. But he fell in love with Mother, is the best way. She never said that specifically, but he wanted more from her than she was willing to give. And to complete
David would say he wanted to marry her.
Yeah.
Is what I remember.
Yeah, that's my memory too. Yeah. And I'm certain that is, but I don't know whether, I just don't remember the details enough to know whether he asked her for that. Right. One thing that did happen to her though, and it was regarding this, he because of that connection, he asked her, can you give me what I want? Something like that, right? And what she misunderstood, while she was in his presence, she misunderstood. She wondered if she was being asked to give up her ego to him, that he would give her the grace to attain realization. Now, this was the 68 trip that she was in, and she was asking several of the gurus at that time, how much longer am I going to be in this state where I've got more to do? And so she asked these different saints this. And so she just put that filter around Swami Ashokananda, and God told her later that night, she said, no, he wanted to know if you would give him realization. So those are the two stories around Ashokananda. And she talked about those two very, very much connected. And very much something that she wanted us to learn, because she had learned it. So my best guess at it is that celibacy is probably something for a higher yuga to expect it of the common person. There's lots of people with hormonal things and things that where they don't, they're naturally celibate. When I was in the seminary, two guys in specific who were just as sweet and pure as you could get. And they both become priests, and I think maybe very happily so. And I'm going back for the first reunion I've had in 60 some years. So it'll be kind of interesting, or 50 some years. Be interesting to meet some of them, but I know that two of them are still in the priesthood. So, and then there's others who struggled with it quite a bit. And one person became gay and left, and one became a Syrian Orthodox priest. He found it easier to, because you can be married as a Syrian, as an Orthodox priest. And, you know, my age group lived through the hippie thing. And so when they were going to college, after I left after just 2 years. So most of the other guys went through the full 8 years. And ones who became priests had another 4 years behind that, total of 12 or 13 years. But I forget what I was saying. Remind me what I was saying.
About what the sweet ones and then the other ones.
The difficulties they had to go through. Oh, I know in the one case that he definitely found it, that being married was what he wanted, but he also wanted to be a priest, and Syrian Orthodox was one of the ways of solving that problem. So, and there is a Syrian church, oddly enough, right in Spokane. There's very few in the country. But, it'll come to me. it was, so the point of that was all to do with celibacy. And, you know, the idea in the Catholic season, they started us in high schools, they want to catch you young. And, and it is true. There's so much, that you can keep people away from, and can you get them across the water? Can you get them across the pond? You know, can you keep them not thinking about that long enough that, you can get them through to the priesthood? They didn't really want to waste time. And that's why the whole thing collapsed after, you know, I think about 6 or 7 years after I left. So maybe in the early 70s, the whole priesthood at the high school level just collapsed. There was just no way you could do it. And by the time these guys went to college, they were mixing with Gonzaga University students at, you know, at 18 and 19 years old. So, and then you have the hippie world happening at that time, everything being thrown up in the air, you know, having no respect for any of that kind of stuff and being made fun of. I mean, priests have always been made fun of amongst their peers and peer groups. So, and seminarian students too. So it's easier to keep them separated and or better for them. But they, you know, in those days, they kind of were starting to realize they need to mix the people into the society sooner so they don't have too big a shock. And that can shock you too. Anyway, so I don't know. My guess with Mother is that she's thinking perhaps it is something that's positive and necessary. And certainly for the final miles, you have to do it celibate. You have to do it in a sattvic state. You have to do it in at least having control of those states. You don't even have to manifest it in your body, but you have to have control of yourself and your ego sufficiently to control the passions and let for the divine to bloom.
Well, she tells the story of Herod, you know, and the killing of the male children.
Oh yeah, right.
You don't want to kill that Christ seed.
Right, right.
But she also talked about when you're going through that experience, you're overcome with these passions.
Right, right.
You know, it's a great, great test.
Exactly.
In the final mile, as Carla demonstrated so beautifully, it's so nice to have a helpmate and a, you know, something to, someone to care for you at the, as a wife, you know, as a helpmate,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Whatever that looks like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As a spouse.
Laura sometimes makes me dinner, you know, and brings it to the office when I'm working late or whatever. And the gals that work for me, they always go, I want a wife.
Me too.
Well, I think that, you know, from the different people that I have met in who are unmarried celibates, who are in who are either swamis or priests or others, there are a number that we have met that are very, very balanced.
That's right.
And don't feel at all that they are missing that other aspect of themselves, and
or have gained sufficiently, as Mother said, you know, so you ask so little of me to get what I have now. I, you know, she was clear in her mind that there was a little that was asked to get because of what I gained. So that comparison is easier to make. And so people who are at peace, yeah, they can see that being true.
And interesting that, like at the ashram, there's a number of swamis who have already been married and had families,
right,
and then become swamis at the, you know, towards the end of their lives. And that brings me to mind two of the different ashramas, they call it, you know, where you're in different stages. You're a brahmacharya to begin with, and a student brahmacharya, and then you get into married householder life, and then you and your wife or husband will be serving out in the world, doing good deeds out in the world, mm-hmm. And then you retire to the forest at the very end, so that you're, and presumably that at one of the two latter stages is when you go into to celibacy as well for those final stages. Mm-hmm. So the problem is, and maybe the problem with Swami Ashokananda, is that he hadn't passed through through to that stage complete, even though he had all these powers and everything else, but that he'd missed something in one of the stages.
Mother said he came to the brink. Mother said he came to the brink and couldn't cross over. He just didn't have it within him. So something was missing.
He confirmed that to her when she brought to him what God had said to her.
He
said, I went to the edge, but I couldn't dive in.
I couldn't put my feet.
I was thinking of Shruti at the ashram and her talking to her wanting to get married at one point and talking to Swamiji about it. And Swamiji says, you can marry if you'd like to have an ordinary life.
Swami Satchinananda?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think about, you know, the mother's teachings of that for us and how it's, I'm certain that she's told, or I wonder how many people she told, oh no, you should never marry. Cause I'm sure she did.
Yeah.
You know.
I don't know of anybody, but the other thing that we have to remember is for Mother and her path here, she was dealing with Westerners in a Western society. And unless any of us had decided to become monks or cloistered nuns, the temptations are so much out there.
Yeah.
And that to escape those temptations and just even if somebody's not acting on it, you know, for them to have those temptations in a day-to-day, out in the workplace, everything else, it was better to marry than to burn.
Her teachings were definitely for our traditional householder. West.
What I remember is that Mother worked very, very hard to try and get people married.
Yeah, she did. Good point, yeah. She did.
And there might even be some cases in point on this very call.
You know, Yogananda said an interesting thing because, you know, being Bengali, there's a little more liberal notions on eating fish, for instance. And the dietary restrictions are different all over the country, of course. And the little I know, anyway, it's very, very interesting to think that he said to the boys, the monks. Now, I don't remember where I read this. I think it may have been Kriyananda, but it may have been Satchiswarananda. He said that, rather than sit and think about a hamburger, just go and have the hamburger, get done with it, and go back to your life and do your sadhana.
Well, Larry, that's been a great part of our path. We do our best.
Because, you know, generally he was teaching most people to be vegetarians. But he wanted to show, you know, that vegetarianism was made for man, not man for vegetarianism.
And yet Mother didn't say, okay, if you're thinking about this guy, then just go and...
No, but we can always go kind of off.
It's not the same as a hamburger, Kate.
Well, I mean, you can bring up, that one's easier to bring up, but how about just the idea that I want to kill somebody? Well, if you really can't think about anything else, then there's always going to be a continuum. But he's trying to just teach. It was a teaching to say, look, within reason, the Sabbath is a good example with Jesus. He said, man was not made for the Sabbath. The Sabbath was made for man. That's a wonderful teaching. And it wasn't unique to him, but it was a very powerful thing to bring forth as something he endorses. Like, keep these things in perspective. Well, so I guess my final thought on this today was the idea that we have today to fight against is the idea that we have to push everybody who's a woman into being more manlike, male-like, or being, you know, able to go out into the world, when there's probably a larger percentage, maybe a majority, maybe a supermajority, of women who would just prefer, really, left to their own devices, they would love to have children, they'd love to have a family, make a chance, take a try at it. Because these things are difficult nowadays. It is certainly understandable why people don't want to get married. I get it. But at the same time, what's the actual desire for most women? What is it? Well, I won't presume to know that, but I do suspect that it is much higher than is being presented to every girl nowadays, that she should be, you know, up until 35 and right to the last minute when you can can't have children, then start having a family. These are tough decisions that only women have to face. And, so the modern solution is not as good as it, at least I'd like to see more respect for women who choose to, be a stay-at-home mom and raise their children and support their husband. That we should have respect for that person. Instead, there's actual denigration going on.
So. I knew that I wanted to have kids, but I wasn't so sure that I wanted to get married.
Sure.
But I always wanted to have kids. Right. I knew that.
Yeah. And when you look forward, when you look into what's all the options in your life, you know, we live in a different society than most of the world. Most of the rest of the world, if they have that desire, they recognize the avenue there to get that and be successful is to be married and have a husband and be part of a larger family, etc. Because that's not only just required by some societies, it's really beneficial. It's basically been created the way that it has for the benefit to what? To the children. Jordan Peterson says a very interesting thing, and I just really have not puzzled over this, but really has struck me. He said women's biology is a product of evolution. But that evolution, he's talking about men. The evolution of men is to make them more sharper and better in every regard, because they have to exceed, they have to go to the more extremes of society. But for women, their biological determinism is given not to the women themselves, but for the children. And their bodies are put in ransom for that. Very, very interesting point. That it is, you know, women, the evolutionary pressure and the evolutionary thing wasn't designed to make it easy for women. It was easier for the children. What does that mean? One of the things he says, more women have more neuroses, are more neurotic. But what does that give you? It gives you a woman who won't forget to pick up the child from a car, because she's constantly thinking. That's what it is. Women who are successful mothers are constantly keeping those requirements and those priorities in their mind, and men just don't have that. They have other biological necessities, biological forces on them. But the ones who are successful mothers, and we're all the result of people who have a successful mother of some sort.
Because we exist, you mean?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's all I meant.
Because sure. We made it to adulthood.
Yeah, we wouldn't be here without a mother who at least took care of us enough, or people around their mother sometimes.
And the product of a whole lot of genes that survived, right?
Right, right.
Many, many, many instances. Yeah.
I was, sorry, Larry.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say I was a stay-at-home mom. I chose to be a stay-at-home mom. And it was challenging just because society looked down upon that.
Amongst our generation, absolutely. It's so true. Yeah, I know it well.
Yeah, I was stubborn, though, because that was such an important job to me that I didn't care, you know, just had to do what I had to do.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think now, like right now, it's not, I think, to assume that a lot of women don't have a choice, even if they're in a marriage, their husband may not make enough in order to pay all the bills.
Right.
And so it's not a choice anymore. I mean, for some people, they say, well, we just had to cut back our budget a little bit. But for some people, it's not like that. They really have to have both of those incomes. And I'm thinking of my supervisor that I have right now. You know, she probably would love to stay at home with her kids. But it's not an option.
You reminded me of something Mother said. We had a little meeting with Mother once, Rick and I, in her apartment. And Mother said she wished she could have stayed home with her children, mm-hmm. but it really hurt her to have to say goodbye at the door,
yeah.
her little ones. And so she really wanted to support me in that choice. Because mm-hmm. I got flack from, like, you know, people that really mattered in my life, eh?
Yeah.
That, yeah.
I stayed at home when Max was young, but I was always working a little bit. And then I got divorced when he was 3, so then I had to start working full time soon after that. I think when he was 5, I started working full time.
When I retired 6 years ago, my wife had to continue to work because she's much younger than I am. And my kids called me a stay-at-home dad. And I think it was an incredible experience to be able to do that to a certain extent. I think it made me a better rounded person.
Oh, I bet you're right. Yeah.
To more of the, let's say the feminine side.
Yeah, yeah.
My spirit. And mm-hmm. it was a very positive experience.
I'm sure, yeah, yeah.
To be able to do that. And to tell you the truth, with my spouse being the breadwinner now, it adds another dimension to my understanding of who I am, mm-hmm. who I could be. And so I look at it in a very positive light.
Right, right. Interesting. Yeah, a lot of men are getting that experience for sure, are getting that opportunity. The thing is, it can be done. It's not like it's rocket science. There's so much help available now. Things are easier. But it's certainly nice to have help with family members and everything. So, yeah. But... And think about how many husbands lost their wives.
It's much harder than rocket science, Larry. Let's face it.
It's harder to do than rocket science, but it may be not that it doesn't require the
simple.
Really,
I'll say it again. Simple is not always easy.
Right. Well, I mean, say it doesn't require intelligence so much as it does persistence. So, yeah.
It's interesting how God's taken different ones and helped to balance that male and female inside them by giving them these different roles. And we have to trust that God has given us the situation so that we can develop that part of ourselves, you know. And
think about how many men had to raise their children because their wife died in childbirth. I mean, that was... Those numbers, when you read about what it was like 100 years ago, 200 years ago, you know, my grandfather's family, he had, there were 6 kids and 3 lived. There's more to that story, but,
Of course, often they passed them off to another female relative. So actually that's what is pretty amazing about many men today, where they actually are doing the childcare role from a very young age and they're not passing it off to somebody else, and they And they're learning that balance, mm-hmm. and they're learning to do those things. It's kind of, we can see the positive of some things in society, you know, if we.
I wonder if that's a part of the evolution towards the next yuga that we are in our society overall. Mm. Gender is becoming less defined, and there are so many people who are actively redefining gender pronouns and refusing to be one or the other, you know, and put into the box. And so there's been value in fully experiencing a role, but also maybe all of this, as Kate and both and Jill were saying, that there's this balance that's growing in people to fully develop that within ourselves, both sides.
Well, certainly
to be like Mother or David.
Certainly Mother teaches that the secret is to homosexuality, and all of this stuff is we actually change. The astral plane between lifetimes has no gender. And so we change our sex traits one lifetime to the next. So the person who's been many lifetimes as a woman has a very difficult time in the first lifetime as a man, and vice versa. That's her mother's explanation. It makes a lot of sense. We believe in reincarnation, and if it's true that there's no gender in the other realm, we don't retain our gender. It's not necessary. Mm-hmm. So it's natural that people would be fighting this, confused about it. And
I have many young people in my classes at the university who they're not confused about their gender. They're not saying I'm gay or, you know, they're choosing that. It's just that they don't want to be, they're fully aware that they're a human and they don't want to be fixed in one side or another expectations. They just rather be seen as a person regardless and not have the gender stereotypes. So it's been a very interesting learning experience for me and observation, but I wonder if it's all part of it, you know, and even the massive amount of divorce in our country in particular, causing us to have to take on the other gender roles more. Preparing for that evolution of eventually genderless in our wholeness. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe it's not all for the confused or inexperienced as one sex or the other, but maybe it's part of it, part of the evolution.
That's a really interesting take, you know, look at that, Mira. I appreciate that. You know, that wasn't really what I was going to say, but then after I listened to you too, I mean, it is an interesting, it opened your mind up to think about that from that perspective, I think. I had a lot of problem with the gender stuff when it started, and mostly because I would just say, I'm a human being. And whatever you are is fine with me. It's okay. But, and I had a younger girl that I worked with explain it to me in a way that made sense. And I can't remember what she said now. That's been a long time ago, but that was very interesting. But what I was going to really say was when I was, you know, had kids, I had planned on coming back to work, and my boss said, you know, my wife, she's at home with the kids because it didn't make sense to us to put them in daycare all day and let someone else exactly. raise them to yeah. spend the majority of time with them. So I made the decision to stay home. And however, I found very quickly that I was not the greatest stay at home mom. I mean, for the first five or six years, I have a lot of little jobs that I could do at home. I sold makeup, so Mike was with the kids, or I did billing for my dad, and then I could work part-time for my dad at the store, which was really nice. And then Mike was around. And fortunately, when I did start working part-time he was home when they got home from school, and then grandma could babysit. So, you know, at least they were mostly with family. Then right. There was a time I did put him in a kind of a home daycare. I knew the lady that did it, that had the daycare. But, you know, I mean, that's always a struggle and a challenge. But I always looked back and said, I just was not a good stay-at-home mom. I was better at work. And there, I mean, I could go into all the details about that, but you don't want to hear that. But you know, I mean, it's an interesting dilemma. And fortunately, Mike was fine taking a good, you know, lead role in that a lot of times. And I remember one time, I just have to share this and I'll get off. I went to this, I worked at for the Lower Valley Crisis Support Center, and they helped women who had been physically abused, you know, and that kind of thing. I went to this workshop, and it was full of women that really hated men. And they, you know, probably had good reason for that. But it was all I could do. I wanted to stand up and say, you know, my husband, he's home watching my two kids while I'm here. They're not all, you know, men are not all bad. And then I got home, and of course he said, I don't know what the big deal about staying home with the kids is. He made sure the laundry was all done and folded. He goes, it's a piece of cake. And of course I was mad about that. But anyway, that was kind of a funny thing. But you know, that was an interesting side to see that too. Yeah, it's very interesting, but I'm going to think more about the, you know, like, where are we going in the evolutionary process with what's happening? It's not going to stop. It's going to keep moving forward. And how does that fit into the whole bigger picture of, you know, the God direction? Mm. I don't know.
Yeah. Very interesting. Well, anyway, I'm so glad you all liked that snippet from The Chosen. And I think we'll do our closing prayer, and I'll play some music and you can leave as you want to. Oh, Heavenly Father.
Oh, Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
I feel the
wonder and the beauty
of thy glorious presence.
Of thy
glorious presence
in every part of my being.
In every part of my being.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
I kneel and surrender myself to thee.
I feel the power of thy perfection.
I feel the power of thy
perfection
surging in every cell of my body.
Surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence are radiant with thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
Of my communion with thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. Peace. Bliss.
Amen. Agni Parse.